Jobs and Economic Growth Committee.
Good morning, members.
Good morning.
There we go. Senator Daley, you see, it's catching on. This morning, we have a, I don't know if we have an ambitious agenda, but we have a number of things we want to get through, so I appreciate you guys all being punctual, and I appreciate you being punctual, Mr. Phillips. Commissioner Phillips, you are you're our lead-off today, so we wanted to give you a chance to introduce yourself to the committee, to members of the committee, also talk a little bit about your new responsibilities and where we can work together. So we didn't want to set you up with any more of an intro than that. So I'll just turn the microphone over to you. And for those who are here for any of the other issues, we're going to stick with the commissioner and his team until kind of for the first half hour here. So, Mr. Phillips, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I'm extremely happy to be here. As we discussed previously, I'd give a little introduction about myself. I'm born and raised in Eveleth, Minnesota, Iron Ranger. I've spent 30 years living up in Virginia, about 28 years of an economic development career, beginning at Iron Range Resources as the Director of Community and Economic Development. Went then from there briefly, had a brief banking career. I don't know if there's a message there, but I was recruited by at Minnesota Power. Recruited by Minnesota Power and ran their economic development programs.
I was just speaking of brief banking careers. And yes. Sorry, Mr. Phillips, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, no problem. Ran the economic development programs and public affairs and governmental affairs at Minnesota Power for 10 years. Then I was part of a group that started a community development venture capital fund, one of the first in the country, and pretty proud of that. The fund was around for about 17 years, and I worked with the fund for about the last 7 years of its existence. Then I got involved in the construction industry and the business development side of the construction industry, and that's where I spent the 6 years I've lived in the Twin Cities. So I'm a relatively recent transplant to the Twin Cities. So I have a lot of rural economic development experience. I was the director at Iron Range Resources when the governor was the deed commissioner. So we worked together back then, and I think that maybe a little bit of that connection was why I'm here, possibly. So with that, I'll just run through a little overview of our department. And
Let me just interrupt you for a second to see if there are any member questions or curiosities just about Mr. Phillips. And we will be dealing with a formal confirmation later, but hope you'll get a chance to meet with each of the members of the committee. Mr. Phillips, I know you're putting those kind of things on your calendar and working on that, but members, any questions at the front end here? We'll get right into Senator Lilly.
If I could just have a comment. I actually have known Mark for a number of years and his wonderful wife, Patty. Patty is the superintendent of schools of the North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale School District and actually is a superintendent of the year, as I recall, also. So congratulations to you and Patty for that honor. I played a small role in bringing Mark to the Twin Cities, actually, because I served on the committee that that selected Patty to be the superintendent of schools in that district. And thank you for coming to the Twin Cities, and I'm looking forward to getting to know you better through this conversation also. So thank you, Mark.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator Lilly. I appreciate that.
Go ahead, Mr. Phillips.
Thank you. Well, I just want to give an overview of our department, the Department of Employment and Economic Development, for your committee. Our mission statement is to support the economic success of individuals, businesses, and communities by improving opportunities for growth. We do that. We participate and offer programs that create and retain jobs, work with entrepreneurs. We have a big presence in strengthening the workforce, fostering self-sufficiency, enhancing community vitality through a number of programs, and addressing economic change. And I would just mention, when we say addressing economic change, we do have quite a function in the area of research and analysis of labor market data and economic data, regional, statewide, labor trends, and things like that that we provide to the legislature. Some of our economic development strategies include retaining and expanding existing Minnesota businesses, trying to meet the workforce needs of Minnesota businesses, support the creation of new enterprises, attract businesses and enterprises from other states and countries. We also work with communities, helping communities to enhance development opportunities and attract additional business investment in their communities. And we pursue strategies that lever partners to develop regional economies. This is just an organizational chart. If you look at this, I'll just walk you through. In addition to a deputy commissioner, I have three major divisions. One is the Business and Community Development Division, our Unemployment Insurance Division, which we're going to deal with in greater detail after I'm finished, and we have a Workforce Development Division. You see some dotted lines. There's two authorities that were established by the legislature that I have a lot of interaction with, but are kind of separate entities, and that's the Public Facility Authority. It does a lot of water and wastewater projects and things, financing, and the Office of Science and Technology. We also have under deed the Minnesota Trade Office, that it works on the trade missions and export assistance and things like that. And then there's a number of support staff, you know, financial, legislative, and things like that. So we'll move on. If we'll have questions later, if you have any questions on the structure. I just thought I'd provide, I'm not doing much in financial information, but this is just to get the overall picture of base funding. For the biennium, we have about $76 million in general fund, about $588 million in federal dollars, $81 million in workforce development dollars, about $2.6 billion in unemployment benefits, and $63 million of other types of funding. So just talking about the main divisions, again, I'd like to touch on our Business and Community Development Division. And under this division, we, as I mentioned earlier, we have the Trade Office. Recently had trade missions to China and Japan, dealing with some number of other countries coming here from the Middle East and elsewhere. We have a business development office, and then we have people that deal with community finance issues. We have people that deal in Job Z and business finance area. We have small business assistance. We run the small business development centers around the state. As I mentioned earlier, we have this relationship with the two authorities, the Public Facility Authority and the Science and Technology authorities that were established by state statute as separate entities.
Mr. Phillips, on that last slide, have you appointed a new director at Trade?
Yes.
Is that a position that's filled?
That position was filled.
And can you tell us who that is?
Her name is Katie Clark, and she has been in the job. Actually, she started a few days before I did, but very accomplished young woman with came most recently, I believe, from Target Corporation.
Okay, thank you. Are there other, I guess, director positions or unfilled positions in the commissioner's office itself? Or you? Do you have the opportunity to bring in some of your own team, or
I have a communications position open. There's one division director position, I believe that's open. There's a number of slots. The previous commissioner, as people left at the end of the Plenty administration, he was very nice about not, you know, filling those slots immediately and wanted the new team. So I'm actually been overwhelmed with resumes, and but I'd like to take some time to actually look at how the agency is structured, And different commissioners have put their fingerprints on how things, reporting relationships and things like that. I'd like to have that same opportunity. So I've really left most people in the slots they're in, at least for now, until I have my time to get around it. We get through the budget cycle and things. But we know that we have a continuous improvement program at DEED that was started previously that I would like to continue. And I think we're going to be dealing with trying to do more with less resources, so I want to be prepared to do that.
Thank you. Please continue.
Business Community Development Division, I just wanted to point out a couple things that happened last year. We assisted with 50 major expansions in 2010s. Over 3,000 new jobs were proposed as a result of those expansions. In about a little more than $2.4 billion in proposed private capital investment as a result of those 50 expansions. We provided $6.8 million to 62 small and medium-sized firms to help them stabilize and grow, and consulted with over 3,100 small businesses. And a lot of that consultation takes place in our business development centers. We prepared 43 sites for new development statewide, including a $15.2 million in cleanup and redevelopment funds. We helped 57 communities renovate homes and businesses and invest in new infrastructure with $24.8 million. This is our Small Cities Community Development Block Grant Program, which is primarily a rural program, and that's what I'm referring to there, the 57 communities. We funded $14.5 million of public infrastructure to support new business investment in 26 cities. And this is our business development, public infrastructure, and transportation economic development program. And again, a majority of those are rural as well. New development tools, and I just like to, as an aside, to say in my previous role, when I worked in construction, I was part of the Building Jobs Coalition that came up here in the last couple of years pushing for some of these new efforts. So I'm very proud, actually, to be part of the group that advocated for these. The first one I'm going to mention is the Angel Tax Credits. Out of the $11 million that was authorized in the first year, $7 million has already been put out, and that has leveraged a little less than $30 million of private sector investment in over 66 emerging companies. So it's a pretty remarkable record, I think, for something that was, you know, approved less than 12 months ago. So we're very proud of that. Research and development credit was expanded last year from 5 to 10% refundable, and it increased the eligibility, number of companies that would be eligible for it. Another one that I was very close to was the Historic Rehab Tax Credit, where the state established a 20% tax credit to spur historic renovations. It matches the federal money. I can tell you we're already seeing a lot of activity in that historic area. That lags because of design and planning. It's not as quick to get into the marketplace as the Angel tax credits, but I'm telling you, when it starts rolling, that's going to be a very popular program. We have a new tax increment flexibility. New districts were authorized last year in the bill, and more flexible use of funds. I know just personally, I think in hard times, it's one of the few tools that communities have. And so I encourage you to look at tax increment as a tool for a community. I know in some good times that there's a need for tightening up some of the things, but right now when we need investment, it might be a time to look at continuing to look at tax increment. And then we the Science and Technology Authority was created, and they've been in a planning function. They were given a minimal amount of funding to get started. So they're going to be looking to actually fund some programs in the future.
Mr. Phillips, I appreciate you devoting some space to these tools. And I'll put you on the spot a little bit. Do we need to do more? Do we need to do more of these? Do you have a list in your back pocket of some other tools you'd like to see
Well, I do have a list with me of things that I would like to see. Well, some of them I think is funding some of the tools we already have. We've been operating the Minnesota Investment Fund and our redevelopment fund out of revolving money, and there's not very much money left. We're doing the best we can in the deals we're seeing. I think with the increased sense of urgency we're putting on business development, these limited funds are going to be taxed. So I think I'm advocating, you know, the things that were working really well, we should look at carefully and see if they required some new investment. And then there's, I think, the Science Technology Authority and a number of other things. One of my observations in my past business world is that the access to capital in Minnesota has been harmed by the recession. The banks seem to have come back financially. They have money to lend, but the regulatory environment has curtailed the underwriting of small business loans to such a degree because of the uncertainty of the collateral that there's probably going to have to be some program development to get the small business lending up and running again. So I've been working with some outside groups who have been, I think they're around here, around the Capitol, looking at some credit enhancement programs, some partnering with the initiative foundations. I mean, we're looking at a lot of different things that we could put on that list I'm having in my back pocket. And I think there's about 8 items that we're currently, I guess, vetting the concept around and seeing if there's any support for it.
Thank you. Senator Kielash.
Yeah, Mr. Phillips, one of the things that is coming out of construction, I'm just wondering if there's any place in deed for construction sales tax relief for new projects, just to help with the funding of that.
Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, well, that has been a tool that's been used in the past, and we'd advocate for continuing that if we can, again, get it budgeted and that. I'm an advocate for those big development projects, particularly where it's a significant plays a significant role in a decision a company's making about expanding here.
Okay, thank you.
So to continue, the Minnesota Trade Office last year led 39 seminars and roundtables, bringing in a number of business leaders about exporting topics. There were 2 trade missions. There was a China and Japan trip, and then there was another trip, I don't believe it was organized by the trade office, but a trip of academic leaders to Saudi Arabia. We hosted 67 visits from officials, including ambassadors from the companies listed. I won't read them all for you, but you can see that the trade office has been fairly active. We responded to 980 requests for export technical assistance from 525 companies. So this is a real service we provide. This is something that we're very actively engaged in. Companies want to know how to export. It's a way to increase their business, and we provide those kinds of services. Workforce Development Division. And I would be less than candid if I didn't say I worked 24 years on the economic development side. I'm learning a lot in a short time on the workforce development side. But I think I'm getting my arms around at least the big picture, so I'll just run through this very quickly. We, on the workforce side, we provide adult services, services to businesses, the Job Skills Partnership Program, which provides customized training. We are the entity that determines disability. We provide extended unemployment benefits. We deal with independent living issues, the state services for the blind, vocational rehabilitation, youth programs, and veterans employment services. So the real purpose of our Workforce Development Division is really, if you try to wrap it up in a few sentences, it's to connect job seekers with training and education and jobs, and connect the business community with the talent that we've identified. We assist businesses to enhance the skills of their incumbent workforce. That's the job skills partnerships, things I talked about. We assist people with disabilities get jobs or live independently. and we facilitate innovative initiatives to help grow regional economies. We have a workforce center system. We partner with state, local, and private nonprofit partners integrating delivery of over 50 federal and state programs. We have adult, youth, dislocated worker and trade adjustment programs, the job service, veteran services, rehabilitation services, and the state services for the blind. I believe there's a map of the 49 workforce centers around the state, and these range from very small workforce centers in some very remote locations to large, very highly staffed workforce centers. They touch almost everybody's life around the state. We provide services to people with disabilities. Our vocational rehab, rehabilitation, and state services to the blind. We assist people with a disability. We help them secure employment, become economically self-sufficient, and live independently in their communities. Vocational rehab is a federal-state partnership, and we leverage about 3.7 federal dollars for every state dollar invested. And up until this year, and I'm hopefully we're going to continue this, we've never left any state or federal dollars on the table. The state has always stepped up to provide the match we need to maximize our federal dollars into these programs. We also, as I mentioned earlier, we do the Social Security disability determination. I think on an annual basis, we processed 42,000 some odd claims, and we have a 98.2% accuracy. I asked the question, what does that mean? That means that our determination was overturned less than a little more than 1% of the time. So we've done a very good job in this area. Again, in our workforce development division, the tools to facilitate employment. We're very proud of our website, minnesotaworks.net. It's our job bank. This is where people can post their resumes, and employers can come. Just as a side note on this, I believe the statistic that was given to me that I think it was 66% of the employers that went to the job bank looking for employers were successful. I'm not saying enough employers are going to the job bank, but the ones that do are finding success. The other thing is that we have a wide variety of candidates. I think it's like 40% of our candidates have some that post their resumes on our job bank, have at least a year of college or more. I mean, we're getting a lot of talent putting their resumes on our job bank. In fact, before I came here, I was speaking with the people who are temporary employment providers. They're having their day at the Capitol. I'm sure you're going to be hearing from them. And so that's another group that we're dedicated to work with. They find a lot of employment for people. So, and people that get temporary jobs sometimes are made full-time. In fact, more than likely, that's a way to get a full-time job nowadays is start as a temp, and you might find full employment. Getting back to the slides, we also are trying to connect our unemployment insurance customers, engage them more quickly in getting into the MinnesotaWorks.net system. And they are immediately engaged in getting them to sign up for that as soon as they apply for unemployment. We have the jobs stat tool, which is a statistical using our state research and analytical departments. We have a program called Fast Track, training resources and credentialing. And this is where we take people with low job skills that are not having any luck getting in the workforce and providing them with the training they need to get their skills up to the level where they can become employable. Again, on workforce development, services to business. And this is, I mentioned earlier, the Job Skills Partnership. 49 grants completed last year for a total of $7.3 million. And that brought in $16 million in private business match, and over 13,000 people were trained under this program last year. Then we have another program in this area called GATE. It's Growing America Through Entrepreneurships, where we work with entrepreneurs. Our business services division, these are our people in our workforce centers that go out and have contact with businesses. They had over 7,000 business consultations last year, providing assistant with business employee recruitment, retention, and training options. Now, having said all that, I'm going to turn it over to Craig Gustafson, who's going to get into it.
Hang on, Mr. Phillips. Hang on.
Wasn't that easy?
I'll turn it over, but not just yet. I do want to ask. We got a couple minutes to talk bigger picture with you, and I wanted to ask Kathy Thunheim to join you at the table.
Is she here?
She's here. And as part of Governor Dayton's announcement and appointment of Commissioner Phillips, he also made a special mention of Ms. Thunheim. And so I'm not sure. I'll let her describe her title. It's some kind of a senior advisor, but specifically on jobs. And it makes all the sense in the world for you to connect quickly and deeply with members of this committee. So I wanted to at least give you an opportunity to introduce yourself and kind of open it up to both of you. But before we make the shift gears to unemployment insurance, but open up the question to both of you about how you see us, this committee, working with the new administration on jobs, on economic growth, on helping out the private sector particularly. So, Ms. Thunheim, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity. Why don't I just give you a minute in response to your setup about my role and how I came to be here, and then turn back to the commissioner for the answer to the question about how we'll work with the committee.
Thank you.
I am a creature of the private sector and continue to be. I have agreed to serve as a senior advisor to Governor Dayton on the issues of job creation and Minnesota's economy. Specifically, I'm taking a leave from some of my work to make the time to do that, and I'm honored to have the opportunity to do it. I should also mention Katie Clark. The commissioner has the disadvantage that this post is here. Governor's appointment to the trade office is also here, Katie Clark. And I think together we're trying to bring energy to the question of how is it that with all of the assets that we have in Minnesota and all the promise that we have in Minnesota, are we suffering with a below-average job growth? I think we nudged a little bit ahead right at the end of 2010. But the fact of the matter is, like the macro economy, we are seeing a lack of jobs growth even as we see the economy recover. And what the governor has asked us to focus on is to try to understand how shall we proceed? And what I would say in a very quick way is I think we're starting to frame up our work on three levels. There's a macro level of work that together we have to articulate, given the assets, human and otherwise, that we have in Minnesota, what sort of game plan should we have? What kind of economy do we imagine in the future? And that's a public-private conversation, clearly. And my role is going to be to make sure we have robust private sector contribution to that conversation. Then there's a whole body of work that the Commissioner Phillips and the other members of the Cabinet represent, and that is what are the tools that state government has and how shall they be deployed against that game plan? And then a third level, given the environment we're in, and this is where I, again, expect to spend more of my time, and that is we have a lot of unemployed people in Minnesota. We're better off than a lot of other places. But as we all know, if you're private sector people, momentum matters. Having traction matters. Good things happen once you start getting economic growth traction. And so we're going to be looking for some things to do that, again, mostly require creativity and private sector partnership to make sure we're getting some energy going on the ground around jobs. So that's what I'm here to do. I'm, again, honored to have the opportunity and look forward to working with all of you. I see a lot of familiar faces around the table. So, but Commissioner, maybe you want to answer the question.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Thunheim. Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Kathy, for that. We've already been engaged in this.
You bet.
And we're talking to business. We have a sense of urgency. We're talking to employers who provide a lot of jobs in Minnesota and listening. And that, you know, some of the programs that you said that I might have that we'll be talking about in the months ahead are coming out of those conversations. I think what we're dedicated to is engaging the governor, and we're doing that by Kathy and I meet weekly. We talk a lot, but we meet weekly right in the governor's office so we can get, if there's something comes up, we're there. and getting his attention. He's been so far dedicated to putting the time in on it and meeting with business leaders. And I think that part of it is that sense of urgency and dedication to that task that'll bear fruit, I believe. One thing I would say, though, we're trying to develop what can we do some deals right now. That's my history is like doing business deals. You know, what is it going to take to make this thing happen? We're doing that. We're looking at some intermediate kinds of things. That what can we do in the next year, 2 years type of things. And then we're looking at long-term. And there's a lot of discussion about some of the long-term ones. Growing green jobs, I like that one, you know. We're going to, you know, things, and the state does have to pay attention to that. And there's a lot of smart people in Minnesota that help us figure that out. I'm focusing right now, I do have to tell you, on trying to get some people back to work right now and find the deals, find the companies that are ready to expand. What do they need? If we can figure out a way to craft the programs we have and pull together the resources we can. And sometimes it's, can you move the highway intersection? Can you help us with this or that? Some things can be done administratively when what we find out when we meet with companies. It doesn't always require a big check to make something happen. It can be an administrative decision. We're hearing a lot about the permitting stuff in our discussions, and we continue. Right. That's something we'll be working with the legislature on. I know the governor's done some things, but we're going to continue down that path. That won't just be a deed initiative. We'll be dealing with MPCA and the DNR and others on that. But so yeah. I think there's a lot of things.
Maybe one thing I'll just add is that I mentioned to the chair as the meeting was getting started, we began our work coming out of the governor's office on what we call the listening tour. We've probably visited now with at least a couple dozen organizations, some public, some private, around the state of Minnesota. Anyone who self-identifies as being involved in economic development and job creation. And it really has been mostly listening first to understand what people are trying to do, what do they think works, where are the missing pieces, how can we connect dots. It's a lot of stuff that we all can imagine. There's no shortage of good people and good intentions and even good ideas around this. It isn't necessarily as organized and coordinated the way we believe we need it to be, and we see that's our job. So one thing I might suggest that as we create summaries of those listening tours and informational summaries, we're happy to make those available to the committee.
Thank you. I have Senator Decreif with a question.
Yeah, my question is centered somewhere around unemployment insurance.
We're going to get to that, Senator Decreif, but next hour. But if you think it's something that you want the commissioner to address,
no, I'll leave.
Okay, Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your presentation, Commissioner, and I am so excited.
Good morning
that Mrs. Thunheim is involved in this. If one thing I know about you is that you love Minnesota and that you're a taskmaster.
Yes,
so
that is
I
true.
Am excited. I'm excited. I have a question about partnerships between large corporations and small businesses owned by people of color and minorities. Commissioner, I'm very interested in figuring out how do we learn about existing partnerships that Minnesota has grown over the years. I don't know if you know of a company owned by a woman of Mexican heritage. Her name is Kathy Cruz, and her grandfather made the best tortillas in the country, in Texas, and she owns now the largest tortilla company in the country, produces tortillas for McDonald's. She is based in Eagan. And she was able to do that because she has a partnership with Cargill. And I am fascinated by that model, and I think General Mills is doing a lot of that right now. And I am wondering what, if you could give us an example of something that the department will be doing to expand those partnerships, and if you intend to visit some of these programs, or what can we do to promote that kind of partnership in those partnerships in Minnesota?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'm going to have to bring somebody up to know what if we have any existing programs in that area. But just philosophically, that's one area is minority business participation. But I'm for partnering in a lot of things, okay, and that might be one of them. And if we can help facilitate that, I can assure you we will be doing that. I have some – I'm familiar with this in the construction area, very much so. Most of the larger communities – but – as a company, the company I worked for, did a lot in that area of getting minority contractors into big construction projects and things like that. So maybe there's some lessons I learned there that I could apply to the manufacturing and the other business side to that. But
do we have a specific program right now, Paul?
I could reinforce, too, just from the private sector side to pick up on the senator's comment that I think MITA, the organization that helped Kathy with her company, is one model that we're all spending some time looking at. Itasca project, which some of you are familiar with, has also begun to build some work between some of our largest employers based in the Twin Cities and their supply chains, and looking at ways it's being called the building business bridge, excuse me. And they're going to start with a couple of tests in IT sector and the med tech business. And so we're trying on the private sector side to figure out what we can do and then open up those conversations and make sure, again, we're coming back and saying, all right, now, what are the tools in the toolkit that might be available from the public sector side? How do we make these things work together more effectively?
You introduced yourself to the committee. It sounds like and you have a little more response for Senator Torres Ray.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Paul Moe, Deputy Commissioner for the Department. Senator, we have an urban initiative program, you may be familiar with, that we provide some assistance for MITA and other organizations for developing businesses and financing businesses owned by minorities, and I think that's a model that we could look at and partner with. This other example that you mentioned, I'd be happy to look at that further.
Thank you.
I have Senator Howe and Senator Kelash. I want to encourage both of you to either keep it really tight or follow Mr. Phillips out of the room as we turn it over to the unemployment insurance discussion. So, how do you want to do it, Senator Howe?
I'll keep it nice and short.
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, could you tell me on the shovel-ready certification projects, how well is that program going, and have we had anybody take advantage of? I know we've had communities take advantage of that, but have we had any businesses take advantage, or have we been able to place anybody through that shovel-ready certification program?
Senator Howe, that's not a quick one.
One of my division directors.
It's a yes or no answer.
Please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Loftus. I'm the Director of Business and Community Development at the Department.
Mr. Loftus.
Senator Howe, we've created the program and certified a number of sites. To my knowledge, we've not yet had a business locate in a certified site. The certification program came into play just about the time the recession was taking hold. But I should say that there, the other tools that we have on site identification and locations, I'm aware, for example, in Red Wing, the hydro control project was able to use the databases that we have to find the site that they eventually located in. Not a certified site or shovel-ready site, but we are trying to increase the tools that we have in our electronic fashion to make that information available. But the short answer is, no, I'm not familiar with any particular project that's located in a certified site.
Senator Kelash.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Ms. Tuna, I've heard in the past when you reported on the Itasca project that you were looking for regional promotion as well so that we get Minnesota on the map as a great place to come and all the variety of business advantages that are here. And what I'm wondering about is that moving forward and as much as our businesses are great businesses and they compete with each other in many cases, we have areas of industry that we dominate, such as windows or whatever. And I'm just wondering if they can get together somehow or other to start talking about promoting not their business but Minnesota and the kinds of business that congregate in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, I'll make it really short because I think it's another good example of the kind of work and the approach that we'd all like to take. There are around the state a number of great organizations, some public, some private, and some public-private collaborations that get at the issue of promoting the industry in their area. Apex is up in Duluth Superior and so on. And what's happening out of Itasca is a Twin Cities, a metro area organization coming online to do some of that promotion around the strengths of this region. But what we do need and what I think we imagine our assignment to be is to, again, first make sure we're all talking to each other about how we put that narrative together for the state as a whole, and then turn back again to the organizations around the cabinet and make sure that we've got a good forward-looking toolkit to execute against that game plan. So I think the work around promotion is a part of it, the workaround coordination is a big part of it as well.
Just to follow up, and is there any sense about funding something like this, public, private? Have you had any discussions on funding the promotional or the after the, yeah?
Right. The promotional pieces are being done, again, regionally so far, and the regional entity that's coming out of the ITASCA work that you referred to is a public-private partnership. I believe it's about 70% private. I mean, a little south of that, and the remainder is coming in contributions from municipalities and counties.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner, thank you for, I know we had to race through this a little bit, but let's try to shift gears now and bring up Mr. Gustafson to talk about unemployment insurance for the committee, because we do have legislation before the committee this morning. And Ms. Tunheim, thank you. Can I refer to you as the job czar? Czarina? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we're trying to get the appropriate title for Kathy.
Let's work on that.
Yeah. Thank you for the time, and I pledge I'm going to try to meet with all the committee members individually in the next few weeks. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. So I have Mr. Gustafson. Great. And I think we've got so we have this material also in your packet, members. And this will serve, I think, as a good preview and overview for Senator Peterson's legislation. Mr. Gustafson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Craig Gustafson. I'm the Director of Appeals and Legal Affairs for the department. I'd like to go through the PowerPoint, but also encourage you, if you have questions during the PowerPoint presentation, feel free to interrupt, ask any questions. This can be a complicated area of law, and feel free to interrupt at any time. The Unemployment Insurance Program is a federal-state program that was established in 1936. Its purpose is to provide workers who are unemployed through no fault of their own a temporary partial wage replacement to assist the unemployed worker to become reemployed. Administration of the Unemployment Insurance Program is federally funded if Minnesota law conforms to federal requirements and if Minnesota administers the UI program in a manner consistent with federal requirements. All states generally operate pretty much the same. However, benefit levels and tax rates are totally up to the states. So what does that mean for this committee? Well, you may have a very good idea for legislation to improve the unemployment insurance program, but if it conflicts with federal law, then we aren't able to do that. So any legislation would need to conform to federal law. As far as benefits go, year ending December 31st, we had 370,000 Minnesotans who applied for benefits. Of that group, half of them were laid off temporarily or seasonally and will return to the same employer. 20% were permanently laid off, and 30% were discharged or quit. As far as benefits paid goes, we paid $2.8 billion in unemployment insurance benefits last year. $1.24 billion of that was what we call regular state unemployment insurance.
Senator Nelson.
I have a question about the benefit applications.
Sure.
I believe the point was that 30% were discharged or quit. I understand the discharged part. I'm a little confused by quit because I think the purpose is through no fault of their own. So if one quits, isn't it reasonable to think that that is a fault of their own?
Mr. Gustafson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, that's generally the case. However, there are exceptions to that. If you quit for personal reasons, you are absolutely correct. You are not eligible for unemployment benefits. However, there are 10 exceptions in the law for when you quit, you would be eligible. For example, a case where you're subjected to sexual harassment, if you quit for that, you would still be eligible. A medical issue, say you had a medical issue that required you to quit your job, you would still be eligible for unemployment benefits.
Just to follow up, please. Is it what I'm trying to get at is it appears that I've had employers visit with me about the fact, and actually I've had it personally in my own business as well, people who have just quit because they quit, sometimes with no notice. Then we get that they're filing for unemployment benefits. And I'm just wondering what type of safeguards are in there so that those who apply truly are eligible. Do they have to go through this checklist of why they quit, listing one of these 10 items because it's a very costly process for employers to go through and then appeal these type of things when an employee did quit of their own will and none of these 10 exceptions applied.
Mr. Gustafson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, what happens in that instance is if a person comes in and applies for benefits and they indicate that they quit their employment, we would have a department adjudicator who would look at the application, maybe develop a custom fact-finding, send information out to that applicant for benefits asking, why did you quit your job? Then we would also ask the employer, why did you understand that the applicant for benefits quit his or her job? The department adjudicator looks at the file, looks at all the documents that have been submitted relating to that issue, and makes a determination of whether one of those 10 exceptions to quitting applies. If it does not, they issue a determination of ineligibility. If they believe that one of the exceptions to quitting does apply, they issue a determination of eligibility. That determination, either way, is appealable. You can appeal that determination to an unemployment law judge who conducts a de novo hearing on the matter. Generally, those are done by telephone conference call now. Unemployment law judge conducts the hearing and issues a decision on that determination.
Just one more follow-up,
Senator
Mr. Chair. So does that process always happen? So anytime an employee quits and then files unemployment insurance, have they gone through that entire process before the unemployment insurance gets to the employer, before they are awarded unemployment?
Mr. Gustafson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, if the applicant for benefits indicates that they quit, that determination process commences then. If the applicant were to indicate that they were laid off and the employer did not raise an issue on the matter, then the applicant is paid benefits. It would be the onus of the employer at that point to what we call raise an issue with the department and say, this applicant for benefits quit and we believe that he or she is ineligible for benefits.
I have Senator Howe with a question.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gustafson, how many, can you give me a percentage of, in cases where it's either challenged or not challenged, but where the employer is not charged against their rating, but yet benefits are allowed? So let's say in a case where someone says, well, this person, you know, I don't believe I should be charged for it because of some other reason, but yet that applicant is awarded benefits, but the department makes a determination that the employer rating isn't charged.
Mr. Gustafson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, I don't know the exact number. I could get that to you after consulting with our department people who keep those records. However, that's the exception to the rule. Generally, when an applicant for benefits comes in and is paid unemployment benefits, the benefits are generally charged. There are a few exceptions to charging. For example, if an applicant for benefits quits for medical reasons unrelated to the work they're doing, that is not charged back to the employer.
Okay. Mr. Gustafson, go ahead. And members, I know Senator Kreif has a question, but I want to let Mr. Gustafson get through most of this presentation to help us with the bill that we're going to hear. So, Mr. Gustafson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I was stating, the $2.8 billion were paid out in benefits last year. Most of the more than 50% of those benefits were in federally funded extension benefits. 348,000 Minnesotans were paid benefits. In comparison, back in 2007, only $700 million was paid in unemployment benefits. We are currently the 15th largest unemployment insurance program in the nation. As far as weekly benefit payments goes, applicants generally receive 50% of their average weekly wage to a maximum now of $578 per week. Each week after filing an application, the applicant, either online or through an automated phone system, requests benefits, certifying that they are eligible for that week. During the week ending January 29th, over 174,000 Minnesotans did so and requested a benefit payment. During that same week, over $50 million in total benefits were paid, over $27 million of which was regular state benefits. The remainder was federally funded extensions. As far as taxes go, when we pay out benefits, those benefits are funded by an unemployment insurance tax system. We currently have 132,000 active employers in the state. 10.5 million quarterly wage records are filed. Each quarter, employers have to come in and file wage detail records, stating what employees were on their payroll and what they paid to those employees. Last year, approximately $900 million in unemployment insurance taxes were paid. For 2010, our average tax as a percentage of an employer's total payroll was below the national average. However, Minnesota is the most seasonal state in the nation and is the most experienced rated for our tax purposes, assessing higher rates on employers with a history of layoffs. If you have any questions on that, I'd be free to. That's a little complicated at first, but it's basically your taxes are based on your use of the system. Rates vary from 0.5% to 9.4% plus 14% of total taxes due. Employers pay UI taxes on the first $27,000 of wages paid to each worker. One unique thing about unemployment benefits is the cost of those benefits are postpaid, not prepaid by the employer. The employer, through an increase in its experience rating over 4 years, repays the cost of benefits. Because of that statutory maximum tax rating I just mentioned, there are 2,800 highly seasonal employers employing 41,000 workers in the state who do not repay the full costs of the benefits paid out to their workers. The 0.5% base rate goes to cover the costs of benefits for companies that go out of business and those companies at the maximum experience rating. Currently, 85% of new applications for benefits are now done online through our unemployment insurance system. Almost 90% of weekly requests for payments are done online. 95% of employer transactions are done online. And over 99% of all tax payments made by employers and benefit payments to applicants are now done electronically. Our staff assists with over 1.2 million phone calls per year. Approximately 280,000 of those determinations that I discussed with Senator Nelson were issued on eligibility in 2010, and approximately 34,000 appeal hearings were conducted by our unemployment law judges last year. One of the issues that is in the forefront in the unemployment insurance program is our trust fund. Currently, our trust fund is in deficit status. We are one of 31 states borrowing a total of approximately $41 billion from the federal government at the end of last year in order to pay regular state unemployment benefits. We also borrowed in the mid-1970s, mid-1980s, and in 2002 to 2004. Of the 20 largest states by population, only one is not borrowing. As of January 29th, we had a negative balance in the trust fund of $609 million. In comparison, Wisconsin currently has a negative balance of $1.4 billion. However, in relative terms, the deficit, the trust fund deficit in the mid-1980s was larger than what we're seeing today. Latest projections show that the trust fund will have a positive balance by the end of 2013. This is quicker, we're going to get out of deficit quicker than we had projected as soon as last year. Benefit payout are projected to decrease and revenue is projected to increase significantly because of our experience rating system. If you're not aware, we have a Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council. That advisory council includes legislators, senators, representatives, representatives of business, labor, other interested groups. That council meets several times during the interim, discusses legislative proposals and issues in unemployment insurance. Trust fund has been a recent source of great discussion with the advisory council. One of the primary issues to be discussed in 2011 by the advisory council is the question of subsidies to those highly seasonal businesses that I mentioned before. This is a graph that shows what benefits are in place currently. Currently, if you apply for benefits and are unemployed for an extended period of time, you can collect up to 26 weeks of regular state unemployment insurance benefits, and then 20 weeks of what we call Tier 1 of the Federal Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program, 14 weeks of Tier 2, 13 weeks of Tier 3, and an additional 13 weeks of federal state extended benefits. That gives us a total of 86 weeks in Minnesota for unemployment insurance benefits. You may hear in the media reports of 99 weeks of benefits. That's only in other states that have higher levels of unemployment than we have in Minnesota.
And Mr. Gustin, can I dial back?
Sure.
Just can you get on the record that we do have a March, I don't know if I want to call it a deadline, but based on what Congress did at the very end of 2010, that'll have a significant impact on that last, in your slide, it's light blue.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. If law, that's the bill that you'll see next on the agenda. If that is not enacted, that federal state extended benefit program will trigger off in Minnesota in mid-March, and those 13 weeks at the end of that chart will not be available for unemployed Minnesotans, unless the legislature takes action on that proposal.
I promised Senator Kreif the first question at the end of this presentation. So, Senator.
Thank you, Chairman Michelle. And Mr. Gustafson, I have a question. I've been contacted by a constituent who has a seasonal business, a lawn care business, and he also does snow removal in the winter. And he oftentimes goes back to his employees and asks them to come into work in the winter. And he finds them reluctant to want to do that because they would, you know, and they don't say it in this way, but they don't show up for work because it messes with their unemployment insurance. I understand he's gone to the point where he's gone to court over it to deny some unemployment benefits. Had one judge rule in his favor. There was an appeal and actually had to go back again. And the second judge felt, well, the guy needs the unemployment to live, so he gave it back to him again. What kind of safeguards are in place for employers who are trying to run a business in the winter and need these people to come to work when they, you know, when they're needed, to ensure that we keep the unemployment numbers down as much as we can, or the benefits down as much as we can?
Mr. Gustafson.
Mr. Chair, Senator DeKreif, in the case of when an applicant refuses a job offer from any employer, including their past employer, the law provides for an 8-calendar-week denial of benefits. So if one of the employers in your district were to offer their employee a 2-week or a 1-week position in the off-season, if they don't take that work, that employer should then report that to the department because the applicant can suffer an 8-calendar-week denial of benefits based on that that refusal of work. You know, I'd like to look at the particular circumstances that you're speaking about because each case is different and there may be particulars to that case for that reason. But our judges and our adjudicators do not make determinations based on need of a particular applicant for benefits. So we may conduct a hearing as a judge and the applicant would say, well, I really need the money. Judges are not allowed to take that need into account in making their decisions. They simply have to apply the law to the facts in each case, regardless of the particular circumstances of that person.
Okay. I'll try to get back to you on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gustafson, regarding this 13-week extension that we think there will be some legislation so we conform with the feds, what's going to happen? I can see where some folks may have reached the end of their unemployment. They've gone to the offices. They've been told no need to apply because you've reached the max. When in reality, they would have something within this 13 weeks of extension. How are those folks going to get that when they've been told not to apply? How does that work?
Mr. Gustafson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I'm not sure how we will do the communication regarding that extended benefit piece, but generally we never discourage people from applying for any benefits, and we have various communication methods to notify applicants when benefits are available. And I think with the history of these extensions, we've done a good job in letting all applicants know when these extensions have been enacted by the federal government and what's available to whom. And I'd encourage anyone who thinks they are eligible for extended benefits to definitely contact the department, contact one of our customer service representatives to find out if, in fact, you're eligible to receive further benefits.
Just one quick follow-up. Mr. Gustafson, I'm not exactly sure how the process works in general. So if someone had actually, one of my constituents had been told not to apply anymore because they'd reached the limit. So is this person going to be penalized then because they didn't apply during this time period while we're looking at retroactively conforming with the feds? I'm just curious, how does that work?
Mr. Gustafson.
You have to apply every week or something?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, you do come in each week. Now, if this legislation is passed, that doesn't mean there's an additional 13 weeks for people who have already exhausted their 86 weeks. If you've reached your full limit of 86 weeks of benefits, this does not provide additional benefits for applicants for benefits in that circumstance. So I definitely like to look at the individual circumstances of your constituent.
I will follow up.
But if they've reached the end, this legislation would not add an additional 13 weeks. It simply means that the program continues in place for those applicants who have exhausted the other tiers of the extensions, and then they can go on to that next tier.
Well, actually, that's what I'm talking about, but we'll follow up. Thank you.
Let me ask Mr. Nelson and then Senator Peterson, why don't you go to the table there, and we will I want to at least lay out your bill in the context of this discussion. And I have Senator Howe and Senator Kielash again. I really want to get to Senator Peterson's bill.
Sure.
Senator Howe.
I just have one quick question, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gustafson, you might want to stay up for some of these questions, too. Thank you.
Mr. Gustafson, can you
can you turn off that?
You want me just to?
Somebody's going to be blinded, and I prefer that happen in another committee.
One quick question on the unemployment, the rating charge. If someone leaves employment voluntarily and takes another position at a different company and then subsequently becomes unemployed and they file for benefits and they go back and use the quarters that they were previously employed, how does that – is that an uncharged rating to that previous employer, or does that – is that charged against their rating?
Mr. Nelson's going to handle that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I am legal counsel to the Unemployment Insurance Program. Mr. Chairman, Senator, to your question, it's a little more complicated, but let's say it's a for-profit business. Quite frankly, nonprofits and governmental entities are charged differently, so we have to deal with strictly a for-profit business. If that worker quits the job, then the employer will be relieved of any potential charges. So if an employee quits, goes to work someplace else, and then gets laid off, let's say after 6 months, that first employer is not charged for the cost of those benefits. Those benefit costs get assessed against all employers generally.
Right.
Senator Howe.
Just a quick follow-up. So the previous employer, though, gets a note on that. It says this is the experience, this is the rating, and this is what they're going to qualify. And I'm just wondering, if they're not charged, what's the thought process, again, sending that information out? Because I'm just wondering, is that included in there, that it's not going to be charged against their rating? I'm thinking it is, but.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, first of all, when a person applies for benefits, we will notify all the former employers. A worker may say, this is the reason for my separation, and the employer may come back and say it was something totally different. There are exceptions when an individual quits. I'll give you one example. Let's say an individual quits because the employer substantially cut their pay. Well, then the employer would, in fact, be charged in that instance. So we have to look at every single one of those separations to determine whether the employer would be charged or not charged. Just because you quit doesn't mean the employer isn't charged. Sometimes, like I say, if it's a substantial pay cut or let's say a worker's mistreated, substantially abused by a supervisor or something else, and they've complained and not fixed by an employer, that, in fact, could be charged to the employer. That's why, as Mr. Gustafson explained, there's an investigative process we go through. If people don't like it, then go through an appeal process if they're unhappy with the initial result. But that's why we have a lot of staff, and that's why it's an intensive process in determining these issues, because there are a lot of separations from employment that we have to look into, investigate, and determine whether the employer is charged or not charged, whether benefits are paid or not paid.
Senator Kielash, quickly.
Yep. Mr. Gustafson, I'm wondering about enforcement for misclassified workers and how the department is dealing with that, how successful they are. And there's a lot of independent contractors that are not eligible for unemployment benefits. Could you just go into that a little bit?
Mr. Gustafson.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator. As far as the misclassification of workers go, we do have a field audit unit that investigates employers throughout the state and determines if employees are correctly classified. Mr. Nelson has actually been serving on the misclassification of worker task force, so maybe he wants to update you on the current status of what's going on there.
Mr. Nelson, I'd encourage you to answer the question briefly.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, there is a task force with the Department of Labor and Industry, and we hope to have a final report here within the next week or so.
Members, we now have before us Senate File 114. You have a copy of the bill. You have a one-page summary, and you also have a fiscal note related to the bill's impact on the UI Trust Fund. I'll ask Senator Peterson how he'd like to proceed, but assume you want to give a quick overview of the bill, and then we can hear from the department if they have anything to add or any context to give. Senator Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. In addition to that, you should have an A11 amendment. Is that correct or not?
We're passing them out.
We're passing them out. Okay. Yeah, we'll get to that amendment here shortly, but the summary of this bill, as you said, is Senate File 114. It's an unemployment insurance eligibility modification and extended unemployment compensation, federal and state conformance. The first section of this bill relates specifically to an issue that I know many of you have heard about from your constituents, and is something that I think most of us will agree we need to get fixed as quickly as possible. It was a provision concerning the limitation of unemployment benefits for business owners back to the way the law was prior to July 1st of 2010. This is reverting the limitation for children to apply to just minor children only instead of children of the business owner. So as you can imagine, a business owner who owns more than 25% of their company, who is not eligible for unemployment, if something would happen to that organization, oftentimes they'll have siblings, adult siblings, over the age of 18 working for them that have their own families, their own homes, and work for their parents. And this bill just simply allows those children to be treated as any other employee when they're laid off. What happened was is that when this bill was passed, it limited those adult children to just 5 weeks of unemployment, throwing many of them into a situation where now their unemployment has run out at this time currently if they were laid off last fall when I first started hearing about this. And so what this does is fix that, and it makes it go back retroactively back to July 1st of 2010, and then it meets a real need for those folks. The second part is the fix that you've heard the deed staff address. It's strictly a modification to our current law that allows us to access the federal dollars. The second part has no cost at all to the state. It simply is allowing us to access dollars that would probably go to other states if we didn't take this step and this measure to help out our unemployed workforce at this time. This section also goes retroactively back to December 19th of 2010. In an effort to head off some of your questions there, I'd ask you just to look at that fiscal note.
there is about a $2 million cost, but I think, as you heard in the previous testimony, it's important to note that that $2 million has no effect on the general fund at all, which is dominating much of our conversation right now. And it's very common for this unemployment fund to operate in a deficit. In fact, I would argue most business owners, which I am myself, you know, I had a payroll of 59 people just last Friday. And I think most employers would like to see it operate in this manner, just for the reason that if you see that fund build and grow over time, oftentimes legislators don't have the discipline to leave that money alone for its intended purpose, and that is to help folks out in an unemployment situation. So generally speaking, I think the business community is very comfortable in the way it's operating right now, and to borrow on a line of credit type idea from the federal government to fund the current situation. I was very encouraged as well to hear that fund is projected to be replenished again as soon as 2013. That should be encouraging to all of us in the business community. So,
and Senator Peterson, let's get this legislation in the form that you want it. So Senator Peterson offers the A11. And Mr. Nelson, do you want to speak to the language in the A11 briefly?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is more highly technical because of a request by the U.S. Department of Labor, simply that the law otherwise didn't have a very clear expiration date, and this puts a very clear expiration date on this particular session law.
All right. Senator Peterson offers the A11. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendments adopted. Mr. Gustafson, then, or Mr. Nelson, can you give us the department's perspective on Senate File 114 as amended?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I will simply say that the department fully supports this legislation and requests that the legislature enact it before the necessary date of mid-March. As Mr. Gustafson indicated, a number of people will lose unemployment benefits. That would be approximately 14,000 people would be cut off. I do want to correct a misconception to Senator Nelson. No one is currently being denied under this particular provision. The extension will end in mid-March if the legislature does not act, and that means 14,000 people who are currently collecting on this extension would be then cut off. No new people would be paid. No new people could come on this extension, and no extension could be paid after about mid-March unless the legislature acts.
Members, any questions for the author or the department? Is there anyone in the room this morning that would like to testify for or against Senate File 114? Senator Kreif with a question.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I guess I'd like to speak in favor of this. I've been contacted by several of my constituents who had similar problems. They're seasonal businesses. This came as a surprise to them. My initial question to them was, did you pay in at the same rate as all of your other employees? And the answer was yes. And I said, well, then to me, you're entitled to the same benefits as the other employees. I think it would be unfair to pay in at one rate and receive back at a different. So without this being an abbreviated pay-in process, I would speak in favor of passing this bill.
Senator Peterson, I think you're doing pretty well. Do you have any concluding remarks for us?
Nope, other than, I'd love to make that motion for sure.
All right, Senator Peterson recommends that Senate File 114, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee. Everyone understand the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion passes. Congratulations, Senator Peterson. Members, thank you. Clearly, there's a number of issues related to the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. I know members have individual questions and some constituents and business owners that have questions. I just encourage you all to
take advantage of folks that we've met with this morning and to meet with them on your specific examples. Tomorrow, members, we have an abbreviated meeting due to the state of the state, but we will meet tomorrow still at 10:30. Committee is adjourned.
That's true.